Good morning, everyone. I think we are on page 681, and maybe we stopped at line 374 and 3. We should begin again at line 374. We're at the top. We didn't read about Hiranyagarbha?
No.
Oh, okay. So we're at the top, just the top line. In him shadows forth his form. Yes. Okay. We'll read on from there. The top of page 681. We've been reading about this marvelous Godhead who is the knot and source of all these wonderful worlds that Savitri is experiencing now. And Sri Aurobindo told us that all worshipped eyes looked out through his from one face. He bore all Godheads in his grandiose limbs. And then he told us that in him, in this wonderful being, the fourfold being bore its crown. And now he's describing to us the four folds, the four aspects of that being. We read first about Virat, who is the Lord of the world of matter. He expresses himself with matter for his speech. Matter is his means and his spiritual sign. His is the dumb will of atom and of clod, the lump of earth. A will that without sense or motive acts. An intelligence needing not to think or plan. The world creates itself invincibly, for its body is the body of the Lord. And in its heart stands Virat, King of Kings. That is the first aspect. Now we'll go on to read about the second aspect. Margaret, will you start?
In him shadows his form, the golden child, who in the sun-kept vast cradles his birth. Hiranyagarbha, author of thoughts and dreams, who sees the invisible and hears the sounds that never visited a mortal ear. Discoverer of unsolved realities, truer to truth than all we have ever known. He is a leader on the inner roads. A seer, he has entered the forbidden realms. A magician with the omnipotent wand of thought. He builds the secret, uncreated worlds. Armed with the golden speech, the diamond eye, this is the vision and the prophecy. Images casting the formless into shape, traveler and lure of the unseen path. He is a carrier of the hidden fire. He is the voice of the ineffable. He is the invisible hunter of the light, the angel of mysterious ecstasies, the conqueror of the kingdoms of the soul.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage or share anything?
I have been writing here for the last year, future. In this, I wanted to explain a little more because I don't remember exactly what you were saying. Why here's the future?
What is an imagist?
An imagist is somebody who makes images.
Then what is it referring to? Hidden fire?
Well, actually, what he seems to deal with is all hidden realities. We could say the occult, the subtle hidden worlds, not the world of matter that we are familiar with, but the subtle worlds that are behind. No? He's described as the golden child, and the Sanskrit term, the Hiranyagarbha, it actually means the golden embryo. It means something that's not yet born, which is information. So he seems to be the aspect of the divine which prepares the things that will be born. That's perhaps why you wrote future. Yes. And he sees the invisible and hears the sounds that never visited a mortal ear. Not the physical sounds that we hear, the subtle sounds of the inner worlds. So he leads us on the inner roads, and he's entered into realms that are forbidden to us. He's like a magician. His wand, a magician always has a wand, not which he does his magic, that he summons his powers to do his work. So his wand is thought and dreams, perhaps, no? And he uses that wand to build the secret, uncreated worlds, the worlds that haven't yet been manifested.
Through our thoughts and aspirations, or
maybe through his thought,
his thought?
That through might touch us. Yes, yes. Touch our inner minds, our inner hearts, our inner being.
Is an aspect of the divinity?
Yes. There are these four aspects. I mentioned it last week. Traditionally, these four aspects, there's the aspect who represents, they call it symbolically, the waking state that corresponds to our material world. So the ruler of the material world is Virat, who expresses himself with matter for his sleep, his speech. Hiranyagarbha represents the sleep state, the dream state. He's the author of thoughts and dreams. He looks after the subtle worlds, the hidden realities. So he's the carrier of the hidden fire. Fire, of course, is energy and heat and light and often aspiration and will. He can speak. Perhaps he can speak to our inner minds, our inner senses, with the voice of the ineffable, the one who cannot be expressed in words. He's always hunting for the light, more light. He's an angel. Angels are beings who carry messages from the divine to us. So he carries the messages of those mysterious ecstasies of the higher levels. And he's the conqueror of the kingdoms of the soul.
Sir Helen, Mother talks a dream about Aurobindo.
Yes.
Could we say that Mother, when she was identified, when she is in the Hiranyagarbha state and she has manifested this?
Yes, you could say that in the dream world she's created the ideal Aurobindo, the place that Earth needs. No? And when Huta was doubting whether Auroville and Matrimandir could ever manifest at all, Mother says, yes, it's a dream, but it's a dream of the Lord, and his dreams have a habit of coming true. So they have to come through into our earthly reality. No? But they can only do that because they've already been dreamed. They're already there in the world of future possibilities, in the world of possibility.
I remember I have read once that mother said, 20 before, something is already done. Just to come down.
Yes.
She was talking about the dream.
She said that in the 70s.
The 70s, yes.
Yes, that on the subtle plane, yeah. On this plane, yeah. Of Hiranyagarbha, the whole city is already there.
Yeah.
No, it only has to come down.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, in that case,
what are we doing?
In that case, perhaps a dream is also reality.
Yes, of course, it's a kind of reality. Yeah.
But then human freedom.
It's not a material reality, but it's a reality on the subtle realms, and that makes it a potential reality.
And perhaps it's not unborn.
It's unborn in the material world. But definitely it's born. This embryo is there, this golden child is there. I don't want to be so specific as that. Because in book 2, there Sri Aurobindo describes the whole world stair of subtle worlds, and all of them contribute to our material world. So there's the subtle physical is a very all-encompassing sort of, yeah.
But I have a doubt. If everything is there 20 years ago or so, then what happens to the human free will? Like, then all of human interactions came and then this thing came up, for example. So if everything was planned beforehand, then what happens to our free will? Human.
It's a very profound topic, the question of free will. How much free will do we really have? And in what does our free will consist? I've spoken about this before. I don't know whether it's the appropriate time to speak about it again. My beloved teacher, Amal Kiran, was in complete doubt about, troubled. He had a philosopher's mind and he was very, very troubled with this question, whether he has free will or not. And he pursued all kinds of inquiries about it. And finally he went to Mother and he said, Mother, do I have free will or not? And she said, well, you can think of it like this. And you can think. And he said, Mother, I have thought of it in every possible way. Please just tell me, do I or don't I? And she said, you do. You have free will. And then he spent, I think, another 20 years studying the the topic to find out in what his free will consisted. And he came to the conclusion that each level of our being is more or less determined by material circumstances, past formations, circumstances, all kinds of things. The thing that is most determined is our physical body. And then perhaps we've got a subtle physical body which is less determined. And the life being is even less determined, and there are occultists who know how to use the will of the vital being to do things that materially seem to be impossible. And particularly the mind has much more freedom. But the part of us which has perhaps the most freedom is the soul. The soul. So our will is only, he came to the conclusion that our will is only truly free when it's identified with the divine will. I don't think I can say anything more about that just now. Don.
I have a memory of the past, and it might have come from you. I don't really recall at all from whom it came there, but Amyam Kiran, the only true free will that we here as humans have is aspiration. To aspire is, truly to aspire is an act of free will.
If something, if our soul inspires us to aspire, no? Then we have a rather high degree of choice, you know, what we aspire for and what we do about implementing our aspiration. But this is something one has to observe for oneself. But I think here when he speaks about these four aspects of the divine, well, one is what is realized in the material world. And then there's the world of potentiality, of prophets and seers. No? And then there's a third which stands behind and supports that. And beyond that, there's a fourth which is supporting all. No? You wanted to say something, Margaret?
Yes, for me it was always an old German saying, how you call in the forest, those echoes back. That is how our, how you say, where you concentrate, on what you concentrate on, that you call also, that you get in contact with. So in this way, you have to be conscious what you think about and what you aspire for. And that is a free will.
And then there's what the Gita says, that what a person believes in and constantly wills to be, that he will become, that he can achieve.
It's when my will and his will get together.
Yes, of course. We read about that. That comes at the beginning of the poem, no?
What is the form? You say three.
Well, we haven't got there yet.
Okay. No, I was like...
Yes, Larry, you have something to say?
Yeah, I just was reading something related to this, and in a sense, have free will, but we have, there's different parts of our consciousness. We have our conscious part that we're aware
yes.
of. There's a subconscious part,
which
and
is
there's a superconscious part.
Yes.
So our subconscious is the most determined and most limited. Consciously, we can have a certain
freedom.
Relative free will, but the real free will would be in the superconscious
yeah.
part of our being.
Yes. Yes, that's it, exactly. So now we come to the third spirit. Jocelyn, what do you read?
The third spirit stood behind the hidden force, a mass of superconscious, closed in light, creator of things in his all-knowing view. All on his thinness, him as grows a tree. He is our seed and core, our head and base. All light is but flush from his closed eyes, and all wise truth is mystic in his heart. The omniscient prayer is shut behind his lips. He is with not by thought. His wordless silence burns immortal word. He sleeps in the atom and the burning star. He sleeps in an and loud and distant storm. Because he is there, the incursion does his work. Because he is there, the world forgets to die. He is the center of the circle of God. He is the circumference of the nature's realm. His slumber is an ever-mightiness in things. Awake, he is the eternal and supreme.
Thank you. So this is the third state of supreme wisdom, prajna. If we think of what Larry just said, we could say that perhaps Virat corresponds to the physical mind working in the material universe, our surface mind. And Hiranyagarbha corresponds to the subliminal consciousness. And this is the superconscience, the wisdom, which in the tradition is imaged as asleep. There's the state of waking, of dream, of sleep. And then there's the fourth state.
The first line, there means both the Virat and Hiranyagarbha.
Yes. He's studying behind. These four are in one, no? But Virat is on the surface. And in him is shadowing forth his form, this subtle form of the golden child. And behind is standing this supreme wisdom, which is the creator of things in his all-knowing sleep. He is our seed and core, our head and base. All light is but a flash from his closed eyes. An all-wise truth is mystic in his heart. The omniscient ray is shut behind his lids. He is the wisdom that comes not by thought. His wordless silence brings the immortal word. And he's asleep. He's asleep in the atom and in the clod, but it's a superconscient sleep. Because he is there, the inconscient does its work perfectly. Because he is there, the world forgets to die, because he's supporting it and saying yes to it. He's the center of the circle of God, and he's also the circumference of nature's run. And nature cannot go beyond him. His slumber, his sleep, is an almightiness in things, an all-powerfulness. Awake, he is the eternal and supreme.
Shadavan, it comes to me this image of Vishnu sleeping and from the mirror of him all the world coming. Is that possible to connect?
Well, all these are different images to help us to imagine the unimaginable, different images that the seers have given to us, but the underlying truth is the same truth. Yes.
I have a question about 9386.
Yes.
Because he's there, the conscience does its work.
Yes.
As you expect, because he's there, the conscience does its work.
Well, you know, for us it's a mystery how perfectly the apparently inconscient does its work. We can see this if we look at a piece of rock under a microscope and we see how beautifully every little particle and atom is perfectly in its place. No? How could it be like that? It's only because it is all determined by this supreme wisdom which is within it. So it seems to be unconscious. There's no conscious will that we can perceive, but there's that superconscient will which is supporting all the workings of the inconscient. Is it okay?
Yes.
Yeah, all the recordings are there in the unconscious, and some of them rise to the subconscious, and some of them rise to the conscious. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, he's affecting us.
And at our conscious level, I mean, already we could say in the plant and animal level, there is some degree of choice. The instrument or the form participates in this process of choosing so that it's not unconscious anymore. Mm-hmm. It's for the plant and the animal, it's not a mental choice, but there's some consciousness behind the choice. There's some perception and there's some kind of hidden will. Mm-hmm. And at our level, we are granted a much greater range of choice, which is a problem to us.
Yes.
No? Because we don't have the guidance of that supreme wisdom. That's why we are fumbling about in the dark so much. Trial and error. Yes. Yes. But in this work that we are doing in our clumsy, groping way, Sri Aurobindo assures us that we are preparing a higher state in which individual beings in this material world will participate in that superconscience, that wisdom that would be the divine life on earth from the consciousness point of view.
Was also how unconscious, if you have a wound, what about healing? Yeah, it is or how the digestion is going on, other when you have wounds, how they are healing. It's amazing.
No, our will is rather defective in comparison with that the workings, the workings of
evolution has done already this. It was automatic.
That's why, in a way, one could have some faith that nature might be able to deal with this terrible, insoluble problem of climate change. We don't know what it will mean for us, for our way of life, but perhaps for the earth, she can work it out. If we let her do it, and even more if we could collaborate with her. Mm-hmm. Yes, Don.
And one of the greatest mysteries of all, in the same sense that we're discussing now, is what is art?
What is
art? And music.
Yes, I have a lot to say on that topic, but this is not the moment at all. I can only say that we think that what we humans do is artificial. Nature is natural. Spontaneously, she does things naturally. What we do is artificial. But if we can be in contact with a higher consciousness, then it can become art, something like that.
Hmm. It obviously does. How, what, when, and where?
Yeah, well, all that is explained elsewhere in the poem, very interestingly, not right here. So, and then the fourth stage is described, because it's ineffable, in only three lines. Helmut.
Yes, coming shorter and shorter.
Above was the brooding bliss of the infinite. Its omniscient and omnipotent and almost, its immobile silence, absolute and alone.
So this is the Turiya state, the fourth state, about almost nothing can be said.
Can you use the word Turiya? Does it appear anywhere? The first million doctrines?
Prajna and Turiya are not named here, and I have to say that Dr. Alok Pandey, in this speaking of this Godhead, gave four quite different names. So I think in the tradition there are different names, a different set of names. I'd like these different images we spoke of.
Is this word brooding? It means it's very creative.
Yes, the bliss of the infinite, which is brooding, preparing all that's going to emerge in the wisdom first, in the prajna, and then in the Hiranyagarbha, and finally in the Virat state. Waking state, dream state.
Dream state and then sleep state. What kind of state?
Well, that's what they say. They can't say what it is. Turiya just means fourth. The fourth state.
That's the brooding state.
The brooding state, yes. The state of brooding bliss, yes. Decided everything yet. No, that's... Yes, the process is still going on. Yes.
So, Dhavan, could you please explain, elaborate a little bit about the brooding, the process of brooding?
I feel as if I've explained this word so often, but I'll do it one more time. Brooding gives the image of a mother bird sitting on her eggs. So what's she doing? She's protecting them, and eventually they will hatch, and we will see the little chicks. No? If a person is brooding, they're in some kind of abstracted state, and you can be sure that something's going to come out. It might not be very pleasant. They might have something very unpleasant to say to you. Yes, but... Sri Aurobindo uses it always in the sense of preparing, nurturing something that will be born, whether it's a thought, a creation, anything. So then he returns to that world in which Savitri has met this Godhead. Yes.
So all these four states that you said,
yeah.
Each one of us visit once in a while.
How consciously we visit them, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Unconscious.
But they are definitely all acting through us more or less directly. Mm. And in not only us, but in the whole creation. Mm. Audrey, would you read?
All powers were woven in countless concords here. The bliss that made the world and his body live. Love and delight in the head of the sweet form, in the alluring meshes of their snare, recapture the proud, blissful members held. All joys. Outrunners of the panting heart, and fugitive from life's outstripped desire. Whatever vision has escaped the eye, whatever happiness comes in dream and trance, the nectar spilled by love with trembling hands, the joy the cup of nature cannot hold, had crowded to the beauty of his face, we're waiting in the honey of his lap.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So here, in him, in this being, all powers were woven in countless concords, harmonies, different kinds of harmony, the bliss that made the world. The creative bliss is living there in this body, in this form. And the head is expressing the love and delight. But the whole form is sweet. And his members, his limbs are proud and blissful, and they are holding in themselves as if caught in a net. They're holding all joys, all the joys that are escaping from our hearts. If our hearts are always running after delight, we can run, or they can run as hard as they like till they're really panting, but those delights will escape them. They are fugitive, running away from the desire of life, and they're outstripping it. They're running much faster than life can run after those delights, those joys. The beauty of his form holds in it all the visions that we haven't seen, the kind of happiness that comes to us in dream and trance, and then we can't capture anymore. The sweetness that love can't hold. The hands of love tremble and spill that sweetness. They can't hold it. And there's a joy that the cup of nature, any of our natural vessels, our own nature being, can't hold that joy. But it's all crowded in the beauty of his face. And we're waiting in the honey of his laugh. She heard his laugh, you remember, at the beginning. There lightened on her the Godhead's lurking laugh. That's page 608, line 6 down. All grace and glory and all divinity were here collected in a single form.
And the first word, 395, and all powers, means all the four powers, which he has described, Virat and Hiranyakashipu, and all are in concord and in harmony, or all?
I think it means all powers, okay. Whatever kind of power or force we can conceive, or even those we can't conceive of, they are all woven there. He contains all possibilities in himself, in harmony, many different kinds of harmony. So that's what perhaps gives the impression of moving, that it's not fixed. There are multiple possibilities there.
So you're going to say that also once all problems are problems of harmony or missing harmony.
You like to read, Anandi? Things hidden.
Things hidden by the silence of the hours, the ideas that find no voice on living lips, a soul's pregnant meeting with infinity had come to birth in him and taken fire. The secret whisper of the flower and star reveal its meaning in his pathless mood. His lips curved, eloquent, like a rose of dawn. His smile, a play with the wonder of the mind, and stayed in the heart when it had left his mouth. Glimmered with the radiance of the morning star, gemming the white discovery of heaven. His gaze was the regard of eternity, the speed of his sweet and calm intent, wise home, the gladness and the urge. The light of the ages in the mirror of the hours, the sun of wisdom in the miracle of the world.
Thank you. Last week we spoke briefly about the quality of this poetry. So if we just look at this little passage which Anandi read, There's so much in it. We can go on meditating on each line and phrase, and it will reveal more and more meaning to us. But it's evoking the appearance of that God, what Savitri experienced as she saw him. There's his look. There's his smile. There's his gaze. All these are expressing wonderful things.
Mirth here means laugh here also. 422, the light of the aging, the mirth of ours.
Yes, the mirth, the merriment. The hours are made for delight. This is speaking about his gaze. His gaze was the regard of eternity. That's how eternity looks on things. And within that gaze, there's a spirit and an intent, an intention, a sweet and calm intent, what that gaze means and intends. This is a wise home of gladness, and divulged, revealed the light of the ages in the mirth of the hours, the vast spans of time, but also the merriment of the passing moments. And it is a sun of wisdom in a miracled grove. Grove suggests a group of trees, but that open up to the light from above, from the sky, from the sun. And then the description continues. You like to read, Prasad?
In the orchestral largeness of his mind, all contrary seeking their close kinship need, which after wonderful to each other's neck, in the mutual mouthing of their myriad tones, and look like brothers of one family, who had found their common and mysterious home, as from the half of some ecstatic god, there spring a harmony of lyric bliss, striving to leave no heavenly joy unsigned. Such was the light in that he seemed the wideness of the boundless sky. He seemed the passion of a sorrowless earth. He seemed the burning of a worldwide sun. Two looked upon each other, soul saw soul.
Thank you. This description of his mind is what our collective consciousness here in Auroville ought to become. An orchestral largeness in which each contributes its own note. And all the contrary seekings that seem to be opposites, contradictory even, find their close kinship, how they are connected and related, and how much they enjoy that contact, rich-hearted, wonderful to each other they meet. In the mutual marveling of their myriad notes. All these so many, many different expressions, how marvelous they are, and how much all appreciate each other. Dwelling like brothers of one family who have found their common and mysterious home. They've come together and found where they can all be together and play their notes and marvel at the differences.
Think about the mentor meeting yesterday. I was expecting the meeting yesterday.
I also was thinking
yeah,
of that.
Yeah.
It was not too bad.
No,
but I wish it had been more
yeah,
like this. Yesterday we had this mentor
yeah.
pool meeting in our hall here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
in the meditation. And of course that's what we do in our general meetings. The contrary seekings are expressed, but more often the mutual marveling and appreciation is not there. No.
It was
there to a certain extent.
Harmonizing next step. Then harmonizing all those different contrasts.
No, here they are spontaneously harmonized, no?
Yeah.
In this, in his mind. They all come together and they all find their place. Of course, that's how the supramental state must be.
I think the key is recharged, no?
That's the mind of this God, and then the life. It's like music flowing from a harp played by some ecstatic God. He's inspired, he's playing. There springs a harmony of lyric bliss that is striving to leave no heavenly joy unsung. It all has to be celebrated. Such was the life in that embodied light. So taken all together, he seemed the wideness of a boundless sky. He seemed the passion, the intensity of a sorrowless earth. So this is an intensity of delight, not an intensity of suffering. He seemed the burning of a worldwide sun, intensity and warmth and energy, light. So the two look upon each other, Savitri, the Godhead. They look at each other as equals.
Savitri, Saravan, this Godhead, this he, is always dead, that she sees different.
She has experienced, in the past she has experienced him as death.
Yes,
now she experiences him in this glorious form.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes. What was hiding behind that mask of death and laughing at her. He mentions the laugh. He takes off his mask and he says, ha ha. You didn't know it was me.
And with him, all the four forces of men.
Yes, within him, yes. And all worshipped eyes look through his from one face. Yeah. So now he's going to speak to her. We haven't read any further than that? Okay, so we've got 15, 20 minutes left. We can read on the next section then. Yeah, there's time to read the next section. You will start here?
Tamako,
would you read?
Then like an answer from the heart's listening came, a voice soared up whose magic sound could turn poignant weeping of the earth to sobs, of rapture of her cry to spirit song. O human image of the deadless world, how hast thou seen beyond the topper's walls the gleaming sisters of the divine gate, some of the journey of their wakeful sleep, and under revelation's arches forced. The carved thought shrouded doors to swing apart, unlocked the avenues of spiritual sight, and told the entries of a heavenlier state to thy rapt soul that wore the golden sky.
Key.
At the golden key. In thee the secret sight man's blindness missed has opened its view past time, my chariot course, and there my canon which I drive through life. To reach my unseen distances of this, I am the hushed search of the jealous gods, pursuing my wisdom's vast mysterious work, seized in the thousand meeting ways of heaven. I am the beauty of the unveiled ray, drawing through the deep rose of the infinite night. The unconquerable pilgrim soul of earth, beneath the flaring torches of the stars, I am the
inviolable.
I am the inviolable ecstasy. They who have looked on me shall grieve no more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The eyes that live in night shall see my form. On the pale shores of foaming, the still springs that flow beneath a great tormented sky, two powers from one original ecstasy born, but parted in the life of man. One leads to earth, the other yearns to the sky. Heaven in its rapture dreams of perfect earth. Earth in its sorrow dreams of perfect heaven. The two longing to join, yet walk apart.
Idly.
Divided by their vain conceits. They are kept from their oneness by enchanted fears. Sundered mysteriously the minds of thought, they gaze across the silent gulfs of sleep. Or side by side, recline upon my vasts, like three bright and trifling divorce, they wake to yearn, but never can they clasp, while thinly flickering hesitates and crows between the lovers on their nuptial couch, the shadowy aeolus of the sword. But when the phantom flame edge fades undone, they nevermore can space or time divide the lover from the love. The space and drawback, a great translucent curtain. Time shall be the quivering of the spirit's endless bliss. Attend that moment of celestial faith.
Thank you. Marianne.
You too shall serve the dual laws which only now she stands, which only now the skulls of vision gleams, who pressing through the forests of their thoughts have found narrow reaches of the doors. Wait patient of the brittle vault of home, making division your delightful means of happy oneness, capturously enhanced by attraction in the throbbing air between. Yet, if thou wouldst abandon the vexed world, careless of the dark moan of things, tread down the isthmus, relieve the flood, cancel thy contract with the the breakdown of the eternal child, or indolence, the wise immortal spread, roam with that hunger, splendor and the sky, spiritual leap by on the sky, spiritual leap by an unseen sun, as Godheads live who care not for the world and share not in the toil of nature's powers, absorbed in their self ecstasy, the glare, cast off the ambiguous need of desire.
Thank you. Patricia.
On Savitri listening in her tranquil heart to the harmony of the ensnaring voice, a joy exceeding earth's and heaven's poured down, the bliss of an unknown eternity, a rapture from some waiting infinite. A smile came rippling out in her wide eyes, its kind felicity's messenger, as if the first beam of the morning sun along two wakened lotus pools. O besetter of man's soul with life and death, and the world's pleasure and pain in day and night, his heart with the far lure of heaven, testing his strength with a close touch of heaven. I climb not to thy ending day, even as I have shunned thy eternal night. To me who turn not from thy terrestrial end, give back the other self my nature asks. Thy spaces need him.
Need him not.
Need thy spaces need him not to help their joy. Earth needs his beautiful spirit for thee to fling the light down on the net of gold. Earth is the chosen place of words. Earth is the heroic spirit's battlefield, the forge where the archmason shapes his works. Thy servitudes on earth are greater, King, than all the glorious liberties of heaven.
Thank you. Tuan.
The heavens were once to me my natural home. I too have wandered in star jeweled groves, paced sun glow pastures and moon silver swamps, and heard the harping laughter of the streams, and lingered under branches dropping milk. I too have rebelled in fields of light, touched by the ethereal raiment of the winds. Thy wonder rounds of music I have trod, lived in the rhythm of bright and laboring thoughts. I have beat swift harmonies of rapture lost, danced in spontaneous measures of the soul, the great and easy dances of the gods. Oh, fragrant are the lanes thy children walk, and lovely is the memory of their feet, amid the wonder flowers of their lives. A heavier tread is mine, a mightier touch. There, where the gods and demons battle in night, or wrestle on the bars of the sun, taught by the sweetness and the pain of life, to bear the uneven, straining speed, their drops against the edge of some divinest hope, to dare the impossible with these pains of search. In me, the spirit of immortal love stretches its arms out to embrace mankind. Too far thy heavens for me from suffering man. Imperfect is the joy not shared by all.
Thank you. Don?
Oh, to spread forth, oh, to encircle and seize warm hearts to love in us a still lighter, the life beneath the willing and the wheeling stars, for victory in the tournament with death, for bending of the fierce and difficult bow.
Bow.
Bow, is it? A difficult bow. For flashing of the splendid sword of God. O thou who soundest the trumpet in the lists, part not the handle from the untried steel. Take not the warrior with his blow unstruck. Are there not still a million fights to wage? O kingsmith, clang on still thy toil begun. Weld us to one in thy strong smithy of life. Thy fine-curved jeweled hilt called Savitri, thy blade's exultant smile named Satyavan. Fashion to beauty, point us through the world. Break not the lyre before the song is found. Are there not still unnumbered chants to weave? O subtle-souled musician of the ears, play out what thou hast fluted on my stops. Arise from the strain their first wild plant divined, and that discover which is yet unsung.
Thank you. Mihong.
I know that I can lift my soul to God. I know that He can bring the immortal down. Our will labors permitted by thy will, and without thee an empty roar of storms. A senseless whirlwind is the Titan's force. And without thee a snare the strength of God. Net that the inconscient gull swallow mends the waves. That through us ignorance stirs, stores thy light. O thunder with the lightning of the soul, give not to darkness and to death thy son. Achieve thy wisdom's hidden form decree and mandate of thy city, worldwide love. Her words fade, lost in thought's immensities. Pity seized them at the length of their cry, and hid their meaning in the distances, the stirred more than ever speak as one. From the unthinkable and of all our thought, and the ineffable from whom all worlds come.
We'll stop there for today. We can hear Mother reading some of these lines.
In him, the fourfold being, born in love, that when he drinks of the nameless day, and seer, and seeker of things seen, rather, who like his campfire in the sun, and the star entangled ether is his home, expressed himself with matter for his in him shadows his form, the golden shine, who in the sun-kept grass carries his birth. Hiranyagarbha, author of thoughts and dreams, with the golden speech, the diamond eyes, his is the vision and the prophecy. A third spirit stood behind their hidden form, a mass of alone in light, creator of things in his all-knowing sleep. His slumber is an almightiness in sin. Awake, he is the eternal and supreme. Above one the holy bliss of the infinite, its omniscient and omnipotent abode, its immobile silence, absolute and alone. He sees the wideness of a boundless sky. He sees the passion of a soulless earth. He sees the burning of worldwide sun. To look upon each other, soul, soul, soul. Then, like an anthem from the heart within came, a voice soared up, whose magic sound could guide the poignant weeping of the earth, the songs of rapture, and her cries to spirit song. The smile came hiding out in her wide eyes.
Thanks to Sherwin.